Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 3 Advisory Committee. It's Thursday, January 17th, 2013, and we are at the Grover Beach Council Board Chambers. And let's call to order and have a roll call.
Thank you. Member Bright.
Here.
Member Talley.
Here.
Member Wallace.
Here.
Member Angelo.
Here.
Member Gehring.
Here.
Chairwoman Ray.
Here.
All right.
And a quick welcome to, we had a little turnover over the break, to Lori Angelo from Oceano and Karen Bright from Grover Beach. Welcome.
Thank you.
And that brings us to public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the audience and the public to address the committee on items that are not on the agenda. Would anyone like to step forward and speak on something not on the agenda this evening? All right, seeing no one, that takes us to item 3. This is meeting minutes from November 15th, 2012. Any discussion? Okay, perhaps someone would like to make a motion.
Move approval.
I guess I will second. Okay. And we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any discussion? All right, can we get a roll call, please?
Member Bright?
Well, I'm not really sure. I'm not sure if I should abstain since I haven't been here, but...
You're perfectly welcome to. I think we have a quorum.
Okay.
Member Talley?
I wasn't here either, but I'm going to say yes.
Okay, thank you. Member Gehring?
Well, I wasn't here either, and I would ordinarily abstain, but I'll say yes just to make sure we get through it.
Okay. Angelo, same dilemma? Same
yes.
Situation? Yes, okay. Member Wall?
Yes.
I indeed was here, so I will say yes.
Okay,
okay,
you.
Motion passes. That takes us to item 4. This is our operations report. Let's start with A, the water plant operations.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Can you hear me okay? Okay, the water plant. Water plant production is 2.8 MGD per day, million gallons per day. State water production is 1.7. million gallons per day. Membrane filtration performance, all five racks are operating approximately 48-hour run times with end run turbidities of less than 0.02. We are now running free ammonia analyses, trying to have a 0.1 or less leaving the plant, the water treatment plant. As far as Lopez Lake, the elevation today was 508.62, storage 37558, that's 76%. Rainfall to date, 8.92 inches, and downstream releases are 4.0 MGD, million gallons a day. Water quality at the terminal is really good. Visibility is 13 feet. Algae counts are low. Odor levels are low. So, any questions?
All right. Thank you very much.
If I could add on the following page in your agenda packet is a NOAA precipitation map of the United States, and this was requested to be brought back. We had this on your agendas during the rainy season last year when we were concerned about Rodriguez Bridge, the creek crossing, and the dam spilling, and per your request, I've brought it back for this rainy season. And what it basically shows is, are we looking at an above average, normal, or below average rainfall forecast for the next 3 months? And when I printed this out in December, they're forecasting almost just to about Ventura below average, us being average. I looked at it again today, and they've extended this below average forecast out to pretty much all of the western United States. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at possibly below average rainfall for the next 3 months, but I'll bring one back in March for you as well.
Great, thank you. And that covered dam storage and creek releases as well, right, what we just heard?
Yeah.
So that moves us forward to item 5. This is our budget and the quarterly update. John?
Jenny Brunick will be presenting that from Public Works staff.
Okay. A little tall there. Good evening. For the record, my name is Jenny Brunick with County Public Works. First item tonight is the second quarter budget status report for Zone 3. The first graph, I don't know if you're referring to your graphs on the handout represents routine operations and maintenance. As of the second quarter, we are under budget by 8%, or $131,000. The majority of the savings comes from the water treatment plant's professional services section. And the second graph is non-routine O&M, and that is under budget by 43%, $89,000. And, of course, the savings comes from the Lopez Water Rights HCP, and this is due for the contractor waiting on the results from the water availability analysis. And the third graph represents our capital outlay reserves, which is under budget by 12%, or $81,000. And, again, this is due to the cancellation of the pH suppression project, as we discussed, I think, last in November. So once those funds have been allocated as part of the Prop 50 match, hopefully we'll see a decrease or kind of be in balance with our capital outlay. So overall, Zone 3, our numbers, we look pretty good. We were 12% under budget. So I have a couple items, so I can finish this, wrap this up, and then go on to the next if you have any questions, or do you want me just to go on to the second? And
any questions at this point?
Yeah, please.
Just for a point of clarification, since I'm new, can you just briefly discuss the Proposition 50 match?
That is a grant they've applied for three projects. I happen to have those with me. Let's see.
It's the, I believe, the perimeter fencing. We talked about these at the last meeting. The perimeter fencing, the Orchid Road drainage, and I don't know what the third one
I think it's
was.
The water treatment, the six-membrane filtration rack.
Yeah, I think you're correct.
So there's those three projects, and we've applied for grants, Prop 50 grant, and I believe as of last week, we were still waiting to hear from them. So
to hear if the funds are
approved.
I see. Okay.
So we budgeted in 13-14, we budgeted those numbers, and you don't have those. I have the budgets with me, and that's my second item.
I see. So will those three projects be included in the budget?
For 13-14?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, assuming that the Prop 50 match happens, and if it doesn't, I believe they were only going to do one of them. I'm not real sure on
that. Okay. I'll wait for the budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Okay. The second item is the flood control zone 13-14 budget. I just wanted to kind of go over a little, just kind of a real brief overview on what happens. What we'll do tonight is just turn these or hand these out, and just for your review, not to go over tonight. We'll do that on March 21st, and then. Once I've given you these, I'm going to mail the rest out to the TAC members and the Finance Committee. And then we'll meet with them in February, go over any questions they have regarding the 13-14 budget. And if they do have any questions or if you have any questions, it'd be a great idea if you could discuss it with them, and then they'll bring their questions to us. That's just what we've done prior years. And, again, we're meeting on the 21st, so I'll do a presentation. It'll be about 5 minutes. It won't be very long, kind of an overview on what's in the book. And so what we're asking, though, if your advisory committee is looking for any endorsements from your city council, if you could do that before the 21st of March so we'd have that endorsed. Let's see. So once we meet on the 21st and the committee endorses it, it goes to the Board of Supervisors in June, and then it becomes budget, assuming that they don't have any issues. So overall, our 13-14 budget, O&M is decreased by about 6%. I have a different number here. Sorry. Look at this here. Yeah, overall, O&M is decreased by about 5.92%, so 6%, and capital outlay was down about 8.99%. And so overall, the billings decreased about 3.8%. So the budget is $252,000 less than the 12-13 current budget, and it's $322,000 less than the numbers we, the five-year billing estimates that we provided your agencies in April of 2012. So all I have, so if you have any questions, if not, we can wait till the 21st when you've had a chance to review the books.
Yeah.
Budget books.
Great. Any questions for right now?
Mr. Wallace, Jenny, John. Will you be identifying the cost per acre foot and projecting that on out for future years or just the 1 year?
I believe we do it just for the 1 year, and that I've provided to Doug Bird.
In a lot of the rate studies going on with some of the agencies, it's handy, if possible, to maybe project out the cost per acre foot into future years, if possible. If not, I understand, but it would be helpful if that could be projected with knowing that it's going to be plus or minus.
Oh, no, we do. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the other, the surplus. I was thinking of the surplus. No, that is there is a five-year projection.
Okay,
I did
good.
Hand that out, I believe, in April of 2012. So that was the most recent one. I can get you send you a copy of that.
We're doing some rate studies, and it would be handy to have that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I know the city of Pismo Beach asked for it, and I sent that to them. Okay. So if you want a copy of it, anybody, I mean, definitely, no problem. I can get you a copy.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, that's it.
Thank
okay.
you so much.
I'm going to hand these to you, if it's
please.
Okay.
And while she's doing that, I just want to reiterate, especially for the new members, that the March meeting will be asking for your endorsement of this budget. Jenny will be mailing these to your city managers and finance officers. Some municipalities like to actually have your governing board approve this budget. Others just get a verbal okay from the city manager or general manager. Either is fine. Just please, in the next 2 months, be prepared to have an endorsement ready for the budget.
And you need that in writing at that night?
No, it'll be a vote.
Okay, a voice vote. Mm-hmm.
Could I have one extra?
Sure.
I have
some extras if anybody needs some.
Madam Chairman, I have one more question.
Yes, sir.
Jenny, will you be having a meeting of the finance officers from each of the agencies before the March 21st meeting?
Yes. Will and I will meet with finance in probably mid-February. I need to get together with the finance committee and set up a date, but usually we do it in mid-February.
Do you have a date for that yet?
It's usually the second week of February.
Okay.
And I know Pavo meets with the city managers and the general managers as well, so we're setting that up, and I believe maybe the end of February, beginning of March. I know Perfect. Last time it was difficult getting them all in one room. So,
okay. Yeah, thank you.
So, yeah.
And may I ask another a question?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Regarding the estimated cost, can I get a copy of that as well?
Sure. For
okay.
The 5 year?
Yes, please.
Sure. Can I get a card, business card?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That takes us to item 6. This is information items. Our first will be item 6A, the HCP status report. And I'm guessing this is Mr. Hutchison and not Ms. Drexage.
Thank you. Mark Hutchinson, Department of Public Works, Environmental Programs Manager. As you know, it's my typical practice to step into a fast-moving and efficient meeting like this and show you a 45-minute presentation that takes us well into the night. However, tonight I don't have a 45-minute presentation, and happily I don't have any presentation at all. My update on the HCP is very brief, as is the staff report. Two important items to report. The consultant preparing the water availability analysis, which is essentially an analysis of downstream water rights, both registered and unregistered, and the amount of water that's necessary to meet those legal requirements, is ongoing. The consultants produced an initial draft in October, which raised questions about the draft and also some larger questions about how the water availability analysis was going to work together with the HCP and the downstream release program. So we prepared a somewhat extensive list of questions and topics to discuss with the consultant and asked them in a conference call to carefully consider those. they've provided a written response to our questions, so we have some answers and some questions about our questions. We'll be meeting with them via conference call on Tuesday to further that week or further that work, and then conference calling with the HCP consultant, H.T. Harvey, on Thursday. They've been holding fire, as you know, pending some more confidence on our part about the downstream release program. And I can report that we'll be able to set them to work on several of the topics that they've been waiting for, because the second point that we've been able to clarify with the water consultant, the same people doing the water availability analysis also did the downstream release program. Although it's not well documented in the downstream release program, we were able to pull out in our conversations with them that they did include agriculture releases in that modeling. Unfortunately, they didn't document them well in the report, and we raised concerns that there might not be enough summertime water. It appears that that won't be the case, although we expect there'll be some adjustments made. All of that means that H.T. Harvey on the biological and HCP side will be able to move forward with their work at the same time that we're wrapping up the water availability analysis. And then working with that consultant to parse out what we need for the water availability analysis and for the State Water Board and the water rights application versus how that information establishes a foundation for further work in the HCP and the EIR and the EIS and other things that will come down the road. So our general approach is get the water availability analysis complete, and as it comes together, back that information into the downstream release program, which is the key proposal that the HCP is written on, and then move forward at speed with the HCP. I hesitate to say that we are on schedule, because until I talk to the HCP consultant, I'm not quite sure what sort of landmines they may have identified out there. But absent not knowing where we're going at the moment, we're still on schedule. We're still in the gap and picking it up. So we did see savings in the non-routine O&M, and we hope to start working through that in the next several months, certainly over the next fiscal year. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to try to respond.
Let's see. Anyone have any questions?
Yes, please.
Ms. Bright.
I'm sorry. the HCP's been going on for as long as I can remember. May I ask, what is the schedule?
At this point,
it's on schedule. So may I ask what the schedule is?
We developed a schedule about a year ago, I want to say, to try to get us to the point where we submit this for approval. And I believe somewhere near the end of this calendar year, we're supposed to have what's called a draft, official draft, habitat conservation plan in the hands of the resource agencies.
So the end of this calendar year?
Yeah, I'll have to double check that, but that's certainly where we're on target to go at this
okay.
point.
Again, well, that's good to know.
Well, you know, there's landmines and things,
well, yes.
but we need to have a target date and push for it.
Okay, well,
and that's what we're going to do.
At least we have something kind of on the horizon.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Rather than kind of undetermined.
Thank you.
Could you elaborate on, you know, what you described, I guess, the agricultural releases being accounted for in the water availability study?
Well, in the downstream release program, it shows, you know, this many cubic feet per second in this year and this month and various months. It varies depending on previous rainfall and reservoir elevation from several years out. And it showed in the downstream release program for fish that during the summer months, we would be releasing 3 cubic feet per second from the dam. And at the technical advisory committee level and the HCP subcommittee, that gave us pause because we know that in the summer months, in order to ensure that downstream agriculturalists were pumping from and near the creek, we typically release between 6 and 7.5 cubic feet per second. So we said, how can 3 cubic feet per second satisfy agriculture, most of whom have superior water rights to that water? We searched through the document, And there was some language about conjunctive use. You know, the fish water and the agricultural water can be used by both. But in any of those scenarios, 3 cubic feet per second is not enough. So in working with the consultant, and I should say who are very competent technically, but they have to talk slow so I understand where they're going with things, they pointed out a couple of places where they had dropped some hints. They thought it was very solid statements. I thought as hints that the 3 cubic feet per second was a minimum if for some reason the agricultural releases should fall below that. So in fact, what they're trying to say is, well, the release in the summer isn't 3, even though that's what it says in the table that's in the document. It's what the farmers need, which is 7.5. He said, okay, that's good. That means we are releasing water for farmers. The next question is, well, we have these big releases in the winter to mimic or shadow natural conditions, and it appears from your document that the impacts on the reservoir are based on the high winter and the 3 in the summer. And they said, no, 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 we modeled in historical agriculture releases. We said, what do you mean by historical? And they said, well, over the years, since the dam was built, and up until we started releasing water in the summer for fish, it averaged about 2,330 acre feet a year, averaged over the year. So that's in the model. So what we're going to do is work with them to make sure that the 2,330 is really the right number, that that will satisfy today's world and any projected future water rights requirements from agriculture, and how that impacts the reservoir elevations, essentially the long-term municipal water supply. What it means, if I was able to represent it graphically, is that we were concerned that we would have to borrow water from the winter that the agencies want to see and move it to the summer, and then the agencies would think, well, there's not enough wintertime water to mimic natural conditions. Well, assuming that the consultant has done this right and there's actually 2,300 acre feet of water in the summer that we didn't see in their graphs, the amount we might have to borrow from the winter and move to the summer is much less. And so it looks like this thing will work. But we want to document that, and we want to make sure that's correctly modeled so that we know what the long-term effects on the reservoir are. The other side of working with the consultant is it's one thing to do a very focused study for the State Water Board to say, here's what the downstream water rights are. This is how we can store more water in the reservoir and not impinge upon those rights. But that just forms a piece of the bigger question of what is the impact of the HCP and its release program on agriculture in general. That's going to be, you know, for CEQA and NEPA and EIRs and EISs, that has to be very solidly done. And then there's some interesting geologic issues that we're trying to figure whether we can build them into the water availability analysis so that when the public gets that, it makes sense, or whether that information needs to be in the environmental documents that come with the HCP. And that's simply the obvious condition that in the Upper Valley, the agriculture is pretty much dependent on stream flow, a very close connection on what's flowing in the stream and what you can pump out or what your well over there is going to be pumping. That's a shallow aquifer, and basically when you look at the creek, you're seeing what the water level is in the streamside gravels, you know, even several hundred feet away. The farther down in the valley you get, it flattens out, the gravels get deeper. So an agricultural well, or a municipal well for that matter, is not so dependent on what the summertime flow in the creek is, but rather what the annual input into the aquifer is as you get down farther. And as that gradient tips and changes, that will help us understand what we need to keep flowing in the creek, again, for agriculture and municipal uses. Sounds simple when I say it that way, but then when you try to write it up and illustrate it and give yourself a level of confidence that this is going to work, takes a little bit more work.
Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
I don't remember the question. Sorry.
Thank you. Anyone else? Thank you. You really do make that so clear. Thank you.
I'm going to look at the recording, so I keep that one. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, that moves us to information item 6B. This is the flood control zone 118 update.
Yeah, thank you. This is actually a new informational item. It was requested at the last meeting by Member Lucy, who represents Oceano, and her community is partially in flood zone 11A. And it was a request and supported by the commission to provide updates on what's happening in flood zone 11A. And I don't attend their meetings, and I'm part of their advisory committee, but thought the best way to approach this would be to attach their minutes from their last meeting, give you a brief overview of what happened when I have that dialogue with the representative from the county for flood zone 11A, and then if there's any questions, I'll do my best to answer them or bring them back at the next meeting. So that being said, the minutes were attached to the agenda. There are three discussion items that they discussed at that meeting, the first being just overall emergency preparedness for flooding of the levees and the breach of the levees in 11A. The second was, and it's somewhat tied to the flooding, is the sandbar management program that is starting to be developed, and the hiring of a consultant who's going to develop some flow models that can be used to have the discussions with state parks, the permitting agencies, and others involved in obtaining the ability to breach the sandbar during or prior to a significant storm event. And then the third was a discussion with state parks on the Meadow Creek maintenance program that they're in the planning stages for, which is also a flooding issue, and I think catching up on some maintenance in the lagoon areas there that will help with drainage during rain events. So pretty much mostly flooding is what they discussed at their meeting. Any questions?
No, I just have a comment. I was around when the levee broke the last time, and the Guyton family live on the other side, and I know that they had to get permission to go in through State Parks land to get them out on that particular day because they were actually having a funeral for Harold. And that was always one of his fears, that because it's not kept clean and the silt that's in the creek itself has continued to build up and build up and build up. And that's always been a concern for most of us that live down in that area, which I do as well. I know that they went out and did some trimming of the tule leaves out in the lagoon area because that was close down by where I live. But I don't think it's going to – they need to do something more than just trimming and that type of thing. And I don't know if they're able to find a way to do it. I know there's like seven agencies involved with this between the Coastal Commission and all the groups of people that have been involved with it for so long. But what concerns most of us is we're going to – before anything gets really resolved is we're going to have a major leak or break in the levee that will – you know, take out the sanitation district as well as the homes that are down at the low levels as well. So this is one of the items that a lot of people are very concerned with, and I haven't seen anything coming up as to resolving that problem. I know they have to go through a lot of red tape. It's standard in California pretty much, but it would be great to find out if there's anything else coming in the works that may improve the situation with the levee down towards the lagoon area in the sanitation district. And I haven't heard of anything, so I don't know if they're just still in line with the rest of the agencies for sure or what.
What I can do is at the March meeting add an update to the activities regarding the,
that'd be
the
great
maintenance of the levee zone.
Yeah, everybody's talking, but it's like nothing's happening.
Anyone else?
I'm just wondering, under item 5, where we indicate that, or they indicate that county staff checks the flap gates, are those the gates that didn't open during the major rainy time when we had that flood?
They have always been operational. There's been people, I believe, who have stated that they haven't operated. Mark, since you gave a short HCP presentation, would you like to come up and continue to talk on the flap gates? Thank you.
So I'm wondering, are those the gates that were in question?
Generally, yes. There's actually two major sets of flap gates down there and then several smaller ones. There's gates where the Oceano Lagoon near the end of Strandway opens through the levee, and that's the area that drains the airport and the island neighborhood and all the area around the lagoon. There's a second set, slightly smaller, on the south side of the levee near the Guyton property that drains the old Los Barros drainage. And then all of the culverts, and there are several, up through the levee on the north side actually have flapgates on them. But the ones that are checked on a monthly basis are the biggest ones, I think 42-inch twin flapgates that drain, again, Oceano Lagoon. You'll hear the term sand canyon gates, and that's how they're generally referred to. Those gates are interesting. They're automatic. They work by water pressure. So if the water on the Oceano side is higher than the water on the Arroyo Grande Creek side, the gates open and the water goes out. There needs to be a differential of at least 2 to 3 tenths of an inch, about this much, to push them open. But if the Arroyo Grande Creek water is higher than the lagoon, it pushes the gates closed and keeps that water out of the lagoon. So when we had the flooding in 2010, the gates were closed because the Oceano Creek had backed up with the ocean and the sandbar and was actually higher than the lagoon. Mm-hmm. And it both rose up, and the lagoon rose up and flooded houses, but Oceano Creek was still higher. And it was not very long after the houses were flooded and all the water was there that the tide rolled out. Arroyo Grande Creek started to flow to the ocean, and when it does that with any vigorousness at all, it washes out the sandbar. That lowered the water. The gates opened, and the residents in the island area said they'd never seen the water retreat that fast because those gates had actually then opened. One of the reasons that, now, adding to the question that people have is many, many years ago, because the gates are so heavy, it would take several people to actually pull it open to make sure the hinges work and everything. So a system of wheels and chains was added so you could manually open the gates. And that's to exercise them, to clean them if there's logs stuck, get it washed out and stuff. So there's an assumption that you can manually close the gates. You can't. And there's nothing in that mechanism that would hold the gates closed if they would normally open. So there's some misunderstanding there. But they're very critical. There's a lot of growth of reeds around there, beaver activity. The Arroyo Grande Lagoon is up into the gates. There's stuff floating. So we have our operators, I believe on a monthly basis, will go down and manually turn the wheels, open the gates, make sure there's no log sticks. Several years ago, the beavers set up a lodge in the pipe. We had to encourage them to move it along. And also make sure there's nothing broken, nothing that's going to be jammed. Zone 1 is engaged with, as an aside, and not to take too much time, with the Resource Conservation District, San Luis Coastal Resource Conservation District, to look at those gates and look at other different kinds of gates, because there are many different styles of flap gates, to see if a different kind of gate would open sooner, you know, so that the water level difference of 3 to 4 inches could be brought down, because that could make the difference, you know, things are that close. If something would be maybe in the midst of a storm, is there a kind of a gate that absolutely would not ever jam, those kinds of things? Or should we have different styles of gates for different situations, or more gates? Would that be better? We have RCDs. That's one of the things Zone 1 is looking at, the gates and the whole operation of those, along with everything else that they're doing on floods. But when you see and hear that district staff, you know, as part of their thing, that's it's those big gates that we're talking about. The others, they do a visual check.
Okay.
Because they'll get silt in front of them or a log. We definitely don't want any of those jammed open so the water's going the wrong way
right.
in any situation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
I have another question while you're here. On the sandbar issue with the drainage out through, it turns and goes down the side of the sand dunes and then out. It used to go straight out.
Right.
And I don't know what affected that other than just, the way the tide runs. Has there been any discussion with being able to go down and actually open that up so it goes straighter down with the agencies that are involved? I know Coastal Commission's part of it. State Parks, of course, and the county. So I haven't heard anything in a while.
There's several things going on on the sandbar. One of them is we engaged through Zone 1 a consultant called Philip Williams and Associates.
Okay.
You'll see them part of Environmental Science Associate, but Philip Williams, PWA, is a firm that's been around the state for many years, and the fellow who founded it was actually an engineer mm-hmm. who early in his career realized in working with biologists on ocean lagoons that they were predicting how a sandbar was going to react from a biological perspective, and he was able to predict it through his engineering profession. So he created a unique niche. So they work almost exclusively on ocean lagoons.
Oh, that's good.
And they've done some preliminary work. We just recently expanded their contract based on the complexities of the situation. What we have from them right now is, I believe, adequate information to be able to have emergency permits issued if the situation came to that. And I think probably enough preliminary information to justify certain elevations that we would need to lower the lagoon to. Where they're going next is the idea that we would develop enough of a management plan that we could go to the agencies and have permits in hand and definite situation, you know, described so that in certain situations and conditions and predicted rainfall, we could actually go out and manipulate the sandbar.
Great.
To lower the lagoon. What we see happening now is good. The width of the opening, even though it's 1,000 and some feet south, the larger, flatter opening is good to see, in addition to the opening that's currently draining out. It is sort of self-operating at about a foot higher than what I would consider optimum, but not near anything we believe would threaten the flooding. Our concern, as you pointed out, with the opening so far south is that the gradient, the flow from the mm-hmm. flap gates of the ocean, is very slow and very flat. But it does make that turn where the historic, near the historic opening, and it has been slowly eroding that.
Yes.
Yeah. I was out there with Philip Williams, and we were poking around on the beach informally. The theory is that when we had the levee break in 2001, nearly all of that water that came down the creek came from Los Barros. Lopez Dam was actually shut off and there was no spill. So even though it filled the levee, overtopped the levee, flooded all of that water from Los Barros Canyon, mm-hmm. Where the flood levels were really impressive, that moved a lot of the broken shale material that we see. The same formations in Arroyo Grande, but behind the dam. Mm-hmm. You can actually go on the beach and cemented into the sandbar with small fines is that material. So Philip Williams' theory is that that plug was put in place in 2001, and that's what's pushed the creek to the south. We see it very nearly overtopping this December. We got a little water over the top.
Mm-hmm.
We're rather hopeful that if we have some good flow in Arroyo Grande Creek, even from a normal winter, that we might see that rapidly change back to that location. Of course, that raises the concerns of the sanitation district because it's closer to their outfall.
But right.
That would be perhaps an improvement. So we're monitoring the sandbar. We have stream gauges on both sides of the flap gates and some other places so we can actually see the tidal influence and that stuff. Philip Williams is working, and the goal is to have that permit in hand.
Great.
The good news is that those permits exist all up and down the California coast. The bad news is the Coastal Commission is very concerned about the number of those permits. And we do have documented 2 endangered species in the lagoon. So it's not easy, but we think there's a path that makes sense that would give us that.
Great. Oh, I'm glad to hear that they're looking at that because that's been a concern with, you know, since I've been down there 33 years where I'm at, and when we moved in, I saw water across the street. I don't see anything anymore, haven't for several years.
Yeah.
And I've actually seen movie pictures of people water skiing in that lagoon.
I've seen the poster. They actually did it. Oh, great.
Yeah, they did.
We need to get those in the file. We did do, as you know, the reed trimming project.
Yes, yeah.
And got almost done before the agencies suggested firmly that we stop.
But, yeah, I saw them down there. I thought, what are they picking? And went a little closer, figured out they were chopping stuff, yeah. Yeah. It was good, actually. I was glad to see it. Every little bit helps.
It does. Even small changes there are valuable.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, any other questions? All right, let's move forward then to item 7A. This is our capital projects update.
Thank you, and I have a brief update on the capital projects that are ongoing right now in the Zone 3 area. The first is the Lopez Terminal Reservoir Inlet Valve, and that's an upgrade from the existing inlet valve that is in a buried vault, pretty confined space, and old and rusted, and we're upgrading that to a raised inlet valve covered in a shed with SCADA system, so some of it can be operated remotely. And it's ongoing, anticipated to be done this spring, and come in a little bit under budget. The other project that's ongoing right now is at the treatment plant, the chemical containment system that's going in place for when trucks come with deliveries. Basically, it's going to be a series of buried drains that go down to a containment tank, and the trucks will park inside of those drains, and it'll eliminate the need for us to come out with the rolled barriers and protect the trucks and everything. They'll now be able to have it go to an isolated place where, should we have a spill, it'll be nice and contained. And that's anticipated to be done at the end of next month. We talked about Prop 50 earlier, just an update on that. We're still waiting for the funding agency to give us a word on the grant awards. We checked in with them the other day, and they don't have an update. But we are hoping that those projects, the three projects mentioned, will be funded with that grant program. And we did say, I believe, the three projects, one of them was incorrect, so I'm going to clarify it now. It's the Orchid Road drainage, perimeter fencing, and then SCADA systems at valves throughout the system. That's the one that I incorrectly said earlier. That's it.
All right. Any questions? Okay, then that takes us forward. We're all the way to item 8A. This is the amendment to our 2013 meeting calendar.
Thank you. This is was a discussion topic at the last meeting, and unfortunately last year in the summer we didn't have a quorum for the meeting that was going to take place in Oceano. They got skipped over and didn't have a meeting at all last year. It was pointed out that they were just going to have one meeting this year and made a request to have an additional meeting in Oceano, and Member Ray from Arroyo Grande volunteered to have the meeting next March that was scheduled for Arroyo Grande take place in Oceano. We confirmed that Oceano is available, so that change is on the calendar, and if you would, we will need a vote on this. If you could vote for that amendment, we should be able to meet in Oceano next month, or in 2 months.
Would anyone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept the amended meeting schedule for 2013.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Okay, roll call, sir.
Member Bright.
Yes.
Member Talley.
Yes.
Member Wallace.
Yes.
Member Angelo.
Yes.
Member Gehring.
Yes.
Chairwoman Ray.
Yes.
Thank you.
Tonight we have no action items for BOS action, and item 10, future agenda items. Anything to mention here?
I don't have anything.
And that takes us to item 11, committee member comments. Anyone have anything to bring forth at this time? Sir?
I'm just thinking that per the discussion that Mark gave us about the update on Zone 11A, and from Member Angelo's discussion there, it's very, very important, I think, for us, even though we're primarily dealing with Lopez and Arroyo Grande Creek, I think it's very important for this group to understand the measures that are being taken in the Oceano area to reduce the flooding there, for the protection of the levees, and the work that's being done in the Oceano Lagoon to make sure that the flows go to the ocean at the right time and so forth. So I think it's really important for us to continue those updates that was brought to us this time.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Well, then that takes us to the end of our agenda. Our next regular meeting is tentatively scheduled for Thursday, March 21st, 2013 at 6:30 at the Oceano Community Services office. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.